Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by The Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes naturalist Gabriel Tallent to discuss his debut novel, My Absolute Darling, the story of a young girl's quest for redemption. Wednesday, June 27th at 7 p.m. at The Ivy Bookshop. More at theivybookshop.com or call 410-377-2966.
I'm Dan Rodericks of the Baltimore Sun, and this is Roughly Speaking, episode 404. 404 episodes. How do you like that? It's June 27th, 2018, the day after Maryland's primary election, and joining me to talk about it are my colleagues from the Sun staff, Aaron Cox, the Sun State House Bureau Chief, and reporter Luke Broadwater. Later, we'll hear from Melissa Deckman, Chair in Political Science at Washington College, and Sun reporter Pamela Wood with results from Baltimore County. Aaron and Luke, how you doing?
Tired.
We're recording this a little bit after midnight. Is it midnight Tuesday or midnight Wednesday? It's midnight Tuesday. It's Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning.
It's Wednesday morning. Yes, it's 12:07 a.m. that we're recording this, and we have results to report. So we'll start with the Democratic primary for governor, since that's the big story.
Yes, Ben Jealous won. So this has a couple of interesting storylines that kind of spin out of it. He won. He is kind of the person that Larry Hogan most wanted to face in November. He also represents the kind of the progressive wing of the Maryland Democratic Party, kind of a Bernie Sanders style candidate. So he is a dramatic break from the sort of folks that Maryland Democrats have ever nominated before for governor.
I would agree with that. And I look back 40 years here in Maryland. So, yeah.
And, you know, he is the second African-American ever nominated to be governor. The last one was Anthony Brown, who was defeated by Larry Hogan. If he wins in November, he would be the first black governor in Maryland and only the third in the country, depending on how races shake out in a couple of other states. But he is part of kind of what we are seeing as the large trend, the large story out of this election, that in Maryland we're seeing establishment Democrats, longtime Democrats, institutional Democrats losing to younger or more progressive or challengers for any other reason.
In this case, you had the establishment, the Democratic establishment in the state, supporting Rashern Baker, the Prince George's County executive. The polls that we saw showed a tie between Rashern Baker and Ben Jealous, but with a lot of undecided voters.
Right. And, you know, any poll is really a snapshot in time. So when we polled 2 weeks ago, they were tied. And, you know, there was a number of different scenarios that were at play. Were people split, or was Ben Jealous gaining momentum and starting to surpass Baker? It's mm-hmm. the sort of thing that you can only tell at that one moment what's true. I mean, I don't think that you can read too much into the election results, because there's a lot of other explanations for why Rashern Baker lost than the identity of Maryland Democrats has shifted. That could definitely be part of it. It could also be that he, you know, didn't run a very hardy campaign. He didn't raise a lot of money. He didn't have a lot of resources. He spent a whole lot of time in his home county of Prince George's. He really counted on them to deliver for him. And he did win there, but his margin there was not big enough to overcome how well Ben Jealous did in other parts of the state, that Rashern Baker really didn't aggressively make inroads into, like Baltimore.
I know the Democratic Party in the state has called for unity now, and it's Wednesday. I think we're going to see some sort of unity event today or tomorrow. But the establishment guys, you know, Martin O'Malley, Chris Van Hollen, Thomas V. Mike Miller, the president of the Senate, are they going to have a hard time getting behind Jealous with some of his ideas, you know, $15 minimum wage, Medicare for all in the state of Maryland?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's two answers to that. The public answer is, of course, we're all united against Larry Hogan. We're definitely going to do everything we can. The private answer is Mike Miller doesn't want to have Ben Jealous as his governor. He doesn't want to have to preside over a Senate trying to deal with legislation that's that divisive, or proposals that are as expensive as what Ben Jealous has proposed. I mean, I've been covering the General Assembly for almost 6 years now, and my gut reaction is that is a recipe for far more friction than you actually have with Larry Hogan, because the Democrats can you know say that they're fighting for you know fighting against Republican ideas. If they have another Democrat there who they don't agree with, they end up with this inter-party fight that just becomes terribly unproductive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't say that's definitely what's going to happen, but that's definitely one of the things that could happen. And that's precisely what Larry Hogan seized on tonight with Ben Jealous's victory.
Larry Hogan, you said he most wanted to face Ben Jealous because he presents the most striking opposite of Larry Hogan, who is seen now as a moderate Republican. I mean, compared to Donald J. Trump and others in the Republican Party, yeah, Larry Hogan is a moderate, and he's going to present himself against Ben Jealous, who would present as too radical for people, right? Presumably.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, there's two reasons why a Ben Jealous candidacy benefits Larry Hogan. One is that he inspires Larry Hogan's base to come out, Republicans, you know, seeing Ben Jealous as an alternative, even if they're a little angry with Larry Hogan for putting so much distance between him and Trump.
Yeah.
They definitely want to come make sure that he can win. And Larry Hogan's electoral math is Republicans, independents, and conservative Democrats. And the agenda that Ben Jealous has put forth is not attractive to a lot of conservative Democrats. So it makes it a little bit easier for Hogan to peel off those votes.
Okay, so let me ask Luke. So how would Ben Jealous win? I mean, the conventional recipe has been Baltimore City, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, get the vote out, and a Democrat can win.
Yeah, I actually think that Ben Jealous does present some unique challenges for Hogan that maybe a Rashearn Baker wouldn't have. One, Ben Jealous can raise money from across the country. We saw that during the primary. Rashearn Baker really couldn't do that. So he's going to be able to keep a well-financed campaign pretty much the whole race. Two, he can excite parts of the base that Democrats have had trouble getting to turn out. The younger voters, Bernie Sanders voters, people like that, the real resistance wing of the party. And in Maryland, with a 2-1 Democrat advantage, Larry Hogan wins through low Democrat turnout. And if Democrat turnout can be higher, well, now you have a chance for a Ben Jealous victory.
Democrats outnumber Republicans by 1.1 million in Maryland, and that is a big number.
Sure. Yeah. And just how the two camps ran their campaigns, it appeared to me Jealous had a higher functioning campaign, and the results speak for themselves.
Compared to Baker.
Yeah.
So
Jealous was able to go into some Baker strongholds. It looks like Jealous won Montgomery County. It looks like he won some of the southern Maryland counties that Baker was really needed to win. And Baker really failed to make inroads up in Baltimore. I mean, I think it looks like he finished third in Baltimore City behind the Jim Shea Brandon Scott ticket.
Hmm.
So it just from sort of a competency point of view, it may be that one camp is just better at running a campaign as well.
Right. And, you know, that's also kind of one of Ben Jealous's pitches and one of the things we heard him say repeatedly in his speech tonight, that he is an organizer. He is a community organizer, that this is what he does, that he figures out how to engage people, how to energize them, and how to turn them out. It's what he did at the NAACP. It's what he did when he was helping to the ballot initiatives to uphold the DREAM Act and same-sex marriage in Maryland. And he very aggressively and early sought all of the labor unions, which are some of the really big get-out-the-vote operations in Maryland.
Luke, you want to talk a little bit about the legislature?
Sure.
Because the other day we were talking about some interesting races in Baltimore City.
Yeah.
We ought to talk about.
Sure. I mean, Aaron can probably give a better perspective statewide on the legislature, but in terms of the city races, you really saw the youth movement take over, which is Antonio Hayes looks like he pretty easily defeated Barbara Robinson.
This is for state senate.
For the state senate, yeah, mm-hmm. in Baltimore City.
So that's an incumbent unseated.
Correct.
Right.
Corey McCray, the state delegate, looks like he's pretty easily unseated. The state senator Nathaniel McFadden.
Longtime Senator Nathaniel McFadden.
Yeah, Corey McCray. His tenure is measured in decades.
Yeah. I mean, Corey McCray really worked hard.
Mm-hmm. And it also looks like that Mary Washington will defeat Joan Carter Conway when the dust settles. That one's a little bit closer, but it looks like Mary is ahead by several hundred votes. Right now, 16 minutes after midnight.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there are this youth movement is for real. And, you know, they took a big gamble, these delegates all running against they had pretty safe delegate seats and all running against these pretty strong and entrenched state senators. And it looks like this gamble paid off.
I should interject here. Provisional ballots. That's all we talked about all day today was provisional ballots. So the last time you two guys were here, which was just on Monday, Aaron and I were talking about 18,700 provisional ballots. That means voters who would have to vote by provisional ballot because of a glitch in the re-registration, change of address, change of affiliation of those voters. And then we went home that night, and I see you tweeting out that the number is actually 80,000. That was only Monday night. And so today, these races we're talking about, do provisional ballots have any bearing on them? Could they still?
You know, the margin in the governor's race, the margin in these legislative races that we're talking about is big enough that it is unlikely that the provisional ballots would have changed anything.
Okay.
I mean, if you do the math, and it is boring, so I won't do it for you. But if you do the math, that it is really you have to end up with a very very close races for them to actually change the outcome.
Yeah.
The kind of the big deal was the uncertainty it created and whether candidates would be willing to concede a race,
yeah.
Given that they don't know how many. Provisional ballots are out there. But we didn't really see that materialize. This just kind of functioned like a typical election where somebody saw that they were losing, that they couldn't make up. They didn't try to gamble everything on provisional
votes. But they don't know how many provisional votes are cast in any given area, right? Let's say Baltimore County, for instance. We have a close county executive race between John Olszewski Jr. And Jim Brochen, state senator. That's still
and
pretty
Vicky
close.
Ullman. Yeah.
And Vicky Ullman is pretty close.
It's like a third. It's pretty, pretty much a three-way tie.
There are only, I think, 200 or 300 votes separating those candidates right now. So that is one where the provisionals will come into play. I just saw Jim Brochen, who's, I think, in second by about 230 votes or something right now, say we aren't going to know the winner till next week. So in these very close races, not in the governor's races Aaron mentioned where there's like, I think 70,000 votes separating the top two candidates. But in these closer races and some of the state delegate races, even where there's only about 200 or 300 votes separating some of these seats, these provisional ballots can decide the winner, I think.
Okay.
And we'll know that next Thursday when those are counted.
July 5th, right?
Right. Correct. But, okay. These are races where the margins are small enough that even if we hadn't have had this snafu, even if there wasn't an unexpected increase in provisional ballots, they would have gone down to the wire anyway.
State's attorney in Baltimore City. This is a hotly contested primary among three Democrats, the incumbent Marilyn Mosby, criminal defense attorney Ivan Bates, and former prosecutor Thiru Vignaraja. And the incumbent emerged the winner.
Yeah, and she did it quite handily. I mean, she won, I think, with about 48% of the vote at the end of the day. Her two challengers split the anti-Mosby vote, kind of how people predicted it might go down.
Yeah.
Almost
exactly, really.
Yeah, that 52% out there that didn't want Marilyn Mosby was split, I think, 28% and 23% or something among the two candidates. This is what people, the anti-Mosby crowd, had feared when they saw two strong competitors going against her, and it worked out just as the Mosby supporters had hoped.
Yeah.
I will say, going around to the polls, I met many Mosby voters. People were very excited to vote for her. She has a real strong base of support and in some ways is treated almost like a rock star or a celebrity at these polls. People want to take selfies with her. They want to give her a hug. I think she's a tough candidate to beat and would be tough to beat one-on-one and practically almost impossible to beat in a three-way race.
I have a commentary on that in my column today. Look for the Sun's coverage, Aaron Cox's story, Luke Broadwater's story. Thank you both for doing this with me up here after midnight.
Nowhere else I want to be at 12:06 on a Wednesday.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Luke, and thanks, Aaron. Stay tuned for some commentary from Melissa Deckman of Washington College and then Pamela Wood of the Sun staff with election results from Baltimore County.
Hi, I'm Quinn Kelly, and I host a weekly podcast for the Baltimore Sun called Female Trouble. Each Tuesday, we feature a new long-form conversation with one of the area's most interesting and accomplished women, from public officials and congresswomen to rappers and restaurant owners. You can find Female Trouble on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Find more info at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble.
Now to Melissa Deckman, professor and chair in political science at Washington College. Melissa, thanks for joining us again.
Glad to be here.
Oh, it's always great to have you to talk some politics, especially the day after an election like this. We should go right to the gubernatorial from Maryland, with Ben Jealous emerging as the challenger for Republican Larry Hogan in the fall.
Yeah, I was really surprised at the ease with which Ben Jealous won this nomination. A lot of polls were pretty much up in the air, and I thought that Rashearn Baker would have a stronger chance against someone like Ben Jealous, but that was not the case at all. I mean, Ben Jealous very comfortably won this primary election, so I think that was pretty interesting, an interesting statement about where some Maryland Democratic voters are right now.
Yeah, this is something I can't say I've seen before. I remember, challengers emerging from the tall grass, Harry Hughes, way back in the late 70s, early 80s, to challenge establishment candidates. But here you have a real progressive, Ben Jealous, winning, like you say, handily. He's got close to 40% of the vote to Rashearn Baker's 30%.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think the thing I take away from this election victory for Jealous is the power of unions. They still are pretty powerful, at least in the primary season. And so I think when the teachers' unions decided to back Ben Jealous, that was a really important moment in this whole election cycle. And, you know, union members, their numbers are dissipating across the country, but they're still incredibly reliably Democratic, and they have a machine, and they get people out to the polls. And I think that that was probably a very important part of Jealous's victory last night.
Okay, so what does it say about a blue wave that people who may not have been inclined to vote for Democrats or just sort of ambivalent about them came out because they saw a real progressive?
I think that's part of the story. I mean, I think that Ben Jealous smartly distinguished himself from everybody else in the field. When you have someone like Bernie Sanders endorsing your campaign, that's going to excite the leftist base of the party. And so I think that those voters came out. You know, Rashearn Baker, I think in many ways very well qualified, has a pretty solid record that he was running on based on his two terms as the Prince George's County executive. But he really lacked charisma, and he wasn't able to really raise a lot of money. And even though, and I think probably because the establishment backed Rashearn Baker in some ways, that is probably what made Ben Jealous appealing for some Democratic primary voters. You know, but this race is going to be very different than the fall. I wouldn't say that this is going to indicate that Jealous is the early front runner by any means. I think he's going to face a tough battle against someone like Larry Hogan.
Oh, most definitely. If you just go by the polling that's been done by our friend Malia Cromer at the Goucher poll, Larry Hogan's popularity, his approval rating in Maryland is very high. It was at record highs, a little bit below that now, but it's still very strong for a Republican in a state where Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1. So let's talk about that a little bit. Larry Hogan has said, according to Aaron Cox, that Ben Jealous is the one he wanted to run against.
Well, I think in a lot of ways, Ben Jealous being so far to the left is really going to make nervous maybe some moderate Democrats who believe that the state's doing pretty well, right? The state economically is I think, arguably stronger than it was 4 years ago. I think also that someone like Larry Hogan has remained a pretty principled voice against Donald Trump, right? He hasn't brought the party to the right like we see nationally in terms of the GOP. And so I think, you know, a lot of Marylanders will say come November, unless there's some big change, something, you know, disastrous happens in the economy or Hogan makes a big misstep, I think many voters will say, look, the state's doing pretty well and we should essentially not rock the boat and elect Larry Hogan again. And I think, you know, that would have been maybe a little bit harder, an argument that would have been harder for the Hogan team to make if someone like a Rashearn Baker, who's very comparable in style at least, if not substance, to Hogan in the fall, that would have been maybe a little bit harder. But I think the wind is in the sails of Larry Hogan right now, and I think it's going to be, it would be really difficult for me to predict a jealous win. But, you know, we'll see. Politics, you know, who can predict lately? This is the candidate that the Hogan team wanted to face in the fall, definitely.
But this is an unpredictable time, so I'll throw in the X factor to the wisdom you're sharing here, and that is Donald Trump. Now, you could say what you just said, it is accurate. Larry Hogan has adequately distanced himself from Trump, and maybe that will continue over the summer into the fall, but who knows what Trump presents, what issues he presents between now and then. And the X factor I see are Democrats who are just so fed up with Trump that they take it out on Hogan, take it out on any Republican, that they just come out to vote Democrat, come out to vote blue no matter what.
You know, that's a possibility, certainly. But, you know, I would say that Hogan has really distanced himself from the Trump administration, really from the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Hogan has essentially decried the Trump administration's decision to get out of the climate change pact, for example, because Hogan realizes that the Bay is the crown jewel of the state, and we need to protect it. And it's something that Marylanders also are concerned about. I mean, I think also that, you know, just recently, of course, with Hogan deciding to pull National Guardsmen from the border in response to this horrific policy of family separation. I know, I think that Hogan's been very smart about and very principled about separating himself. And you'll see that theme happening, I think, in the fall as well. But, you know, could it be like a larger blue wave? You know, I think that in certain congressional districts, in certain states, you're going to see a blue wave. But, again, we saw Hogan sort of taking the Democrats by storm in 2014 with someone like Anthony Brown. So I predict Hogan's probably going to win again. But, you know, we'll have to see.
Yeah, sitting here today in June, on June 27th, we would say that. So if you're Ben Jealous, if he asks you for some strategy, how do you approach this?
Well, I think what Ben Jealous should be talking about, and this is something that's going to appeal to many Democrats, is wage stagnation. Talking about, so the economy overall at a macro level is doing well for the state of Maryland, but many Marylanders have not necessarily benefited from that economic growth. And so if I'm Ben Jealous, I would talk about the fact that we don't have strong wage growth. He's going to talk about increasing the minimum wage, which I think a lot of people will find appealing as well. And he's going to talk about medical care. Lots of polling shows that many Americans, including Marylanders, are very concerned about the precarious state of health care. And so I think what Ben Jealous is going to do is he's going to point to Republicans who've been recalcitrant in expanding opportunities for health care. So that is one area where Democrats potentially can look to what the Trump administration is doing. Recently, of course, the Trump administration decided not to defend, the part of the Affordable Care Act that deals with pre-existing conditions, right, that's extremely popular with most Americans. So I think if Ben Jealous talks about health care, he talks about the economy, I think that that potentially could be a winning issue for him.
Also, just to make my last point about a blue wave and an anti-Trump vote, on Election Day we had Supreme Court rulings on two major issues, abortion and president's power to execute or call for a ban, a travel ban from Muslim countries. You know, a lot of people may be awakened by that on Election Day. I don't know if it made them go out to vote in the primary, but it heightens the concern about this presidency, and it may make Democrats more eager to take part in that blue wave. Hey, Melissa, one last thing. You're in the 1st Congressional District. You actually live there and work in the 1st Congressional District, don't you?
I work there. I actually live in Annapolis. But, But yes, I do know that Jesse Colvin.
Jesse Colvin emerged with 38% of the vote in the Democratic primary. I noticed that the Democrats managed to get 35,000 votes out at least. That's with 98% of the vote counted in the 1st District primary. Andy Harris himself had 47,000 votes. So, you know, Republicans coming out just to show Andy, we're behind you, and it's a very red district.
I think that the 1st District seat is pretty safely Republican. Andy Harris knows his voters, and I think that Andy Harris is going to win in the fall. I think what's interesting about Jesse Colvin, who's won this nomination in the 1st District, is he's following a model that more moderate Democrats have been playing around the country in districts that are more right-leaning. So I think the Democrats have tried to bring people like Jesse Colvin in, people like Connor Lamb out in western Pennsylvania, and others who more closely resemble, I think, the moderate to conservative leanings of the districts there. Mm-hmm. Is it enough nominating someone like Jesse Colvin for the Democrats to win back the first district? I really don't think so, because, you know, Maryland has this very gerrymandered map that has put as many Republicans in the first district as possible. And so I would be surprised if Andy Harris loses that election.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a major flip. I don't know that that district is even in play with congressional committees or congressional watchers, the political websites. But there's a lot of independent voters. The last time I checked was like 100,000 independent voters in that district. Although, you're right, Republicans outnumber Democrats by some 50,000, I think, or 60,000 eligible voters.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I think someone like Jesse Colvin can hope for is that there is a huge turnout among Democratic voters in the fall. That, I should probably also say, might work for Vangelis, right, that you just have a lot more Democrats coming to the polls than is typical during a midterm election. But even then, I do think that Andy Harris has strong name recognition. There's lots of Republicans in the district. I would be really shocked if Jesse Colvin were to upset Andy Harris in the first district.
Melissa Deckman is the Lewis L. Goldstein Professor of Political Affairs and Chair of the Political Science Department at Washington College. She joins us from time to time to talk about national and state politics. Now to Pamela Wood. This is really local politics. Pamela Wood covering the Baltimore County primaries yesterday. And this is now Wednesday morning. We started this recording a little bit after midnight. I went home and got some sleep. I came back to finish here today. So, Pamela, nice to see you.
Nice to be here.
You look good. You were up late last night, too, because the Baltimore County executive race on the Democratic side is very close, right? We still don't have a winner.
That's right. We do not have a winner yet. Election day came and went, and we still don't have an outcome.
Johnny Olszewski Jr., Jim Brochin, and Vicky Ahman. Those are the three main contenders. So what happened? What do we know so far? Where are we today?
We know so far that we are going to have to wait for the absentee and provisional ballots to have a winner among those three. Johnny Olszewski Jr. has a very slim lead. He's up about 300 or so votes over Jim Brochin in second, and Vicky Ahman is in third. Ahman is about 1,000 votes out of first. And now we do know that there were more than 3,500 Democratic absentee ballots that were mailed out. So we don't know how many are coming back. We don't know how many provisionals there are. So
3,500 mailed out, meaning 3,500 that people asked for.
Correct.
Okay. And how many provisionals? Do we know that?
We don't know yet how many provisionals. That's what we're going to be trying to track down. Now, the absentee canvass starts on Thursday. Provisionals aren't counted until next week, July 5th. And then there's also a second absentee canvass for the late arriving ballots, the ones mailed in from overseas and the like.
Okay.
So we may not know who the Democratic nominee is for Baltimore County Executive until the end of next week.
Okay. And on the Republican side, Al Redmer emerged the winner there.
Yes, Al Redmer, the state insurance commissioner, he is an ally of Governor Larry Hogan. He sailed to victory, actually, over state delegate Pat McDonough. It was about 56% to 44%. So that sounds close to people who don't follow politics, but that's actually quite a significant margin.
And on the Baltimore County Council?
Right. We had five of the incumbents on the county council from both parties had primary challenges, and they all emerged victorious. And in particular, we were watching Wade Catch in the north part of the county. He had two primary challengers, and he won his primary election there.
Big news last night had nothing to do with politics. Allison Knezovich, our colleague from the newsroom, had a baby. Not in the newsroom. She tweeted it out, didn't she? Well, what was going on last night with Allison?
She was at the hospital having her baby, so she had big news of her own.
But she followed the election, too. Weren't you guys joking about that?
Yeah, she was texting with all of us in the newsroom. She said she was excited to see how the county executive's race was going to turn out.
That's great. Congratulations to Allison and her husband, Pete. They have a boy or a girl?
A boy.
A baby boy. How nice. Way to go. And Pamela, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
That's Sun reporter Pamela Wood. Make sure you read her story and all the other stories. The Baltimore Sun has great coverage today of Tuesday's primary. Get a print edition of the paper or go to baltimoresun.com. That's our show for now. Your thoughts are welcome by email, Twitter, or on Facebook. Please tell your friends about the podcast. And if you get a chance, review the show on iTunes or your Apple Podcasts app, or if you're an Android user, on Stitcher. For producers Quinn Kelly and Steve Early in the Baltimore Sun Newsroom, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again soon.